Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, welcome to All Brother, the podcast about Salford / Manchester's legendary and much-missed music institution, The Fall. Each week we invite on a guest to chat about their experiences and memories of the group. You can find us at all the usual suspects, of course, but we're hosted at play.acast.com/s/All Brother. Episode 3 of Series 2 sees us chatting to Steve Pringle, author of the upcoming You Must Get Them All, a new book which promises to be the definitive guide to The Fall's recorded output. The interview was conducted live at Louder Than Words, the wonderful Manchester Literary Festival that celebrates oral, written and published words associated with the music industry. The interview was conducted in November 2021 and we had a great time. Hope you enjoy it.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to this live edition of the Old Brother podcast with me, Paul Hanley, and my brother Steve, who was... All four. He pretends it's 20. It was only 19.
I say 20.
I know you do. I just said that.
Well, I count the year as a roadie.
All right. Okay. Yeah, we had this conversation before about touch sensitive. I was in the room when it was written. I always say, well, Elton John's cleaner doesn't get a credit on Candle in the Wind, does she?
Yeah, but she won't play in the bass. Though.
No. Anyway, so
as good as she was,
we're delighted this evening to welcome as a guest Mr. Steve Pringle. What we're doing this year is we're doing crisp based episodes. So we did Johnny Walker the first week, Sylvester McCoy the second week, big Paul fan, and this week we've got Mr. Steve Pringle. So if you can think of any others, just let us know.
Have you been thinking of that all the time?
I have done. I tell you, I have done a ridiculous amount of research on that. I was thinking, what other ones are there? I mean, obviously, Smith. You know, that's not going to work, is it? But then Seabrooks, I thought, there must be a famous person called Seabrook. If you go on Google and look at Seabrook, there are 97 pages about the crisps. There isn't one. I don't think it's a real surname, I don't think. But anyway, we digress.
Well, I used to be a teacher for 20 years, and that's one of the reasons I stopped, was teenagers asking you, what's your favourite flavour, sir?
Brilliant. Anyway, so here we are. So, right, the first question I was going to ask you is about when, obviously, I should make clear, you've got a book coming out.
Yes, it's not out yet, at some point in the new year. The final version is with Ian at the moment for his edit.
He'll rip it to bits.
But it's...
how many words? How many words was it?
It's just short of 190,000 words, so it's quite a good stop. But I don't really see how you could have done it in less, because it's called You Must Get Them All, after the famous John Peel quote. And it is literally that. It is about all... It's framed around the 32 albums... Or 31, if you're a Slates is an EP fanatic. I'm not going to get into that
it's an album.
Debate now. Yes, well. And yeah, so it's a big story, it's a complex story, it's a wonderful story, and it needs a lot of words to do it justice. So when it does come out, and it'll hopefully be on a table for you here next year, it'll be quite the heavy tome, I think.
Don't drop it on your foot, I think, would be the... All right, okay. So when did you get into the fall, then?
Right, so it's a slightly complicated story, and it's been interesting, some of the stuff I've done online, because I've done blogs, I've done a radio show. There's lots of different ways people find into the fall. One of the most common ones is the sort of the Damascene conversion. So I heard New Puritan on John Peel and my life was never the same again, and, you know, that sort of thing. The first fall I heard was Wonderful and Frightening World. A friend of mine who's in my tutor group, she was given a tape by her boyfriend.
So what year was this? Was it new then?
Yes, this was 1984, so I'd be 15.
Right.
She gave me this tape. She had an older boyfriend who was a student who'd made her a tape, as young men are wont to do for the young ladies that they like. And it had Wonderful and Frightening on one side. And she passed it to me one morning in form time and said, "This is too weird for me. You might like it." Because not that I was into obscure indie music at the time. Actually, but my trajectory had been, you know, I was born in 69. So I started buying records about 79. I bought, you know, Cars, Gary Numan, Oliver's Army, you know, that sort of era thing.
So when you say Cars, Gary Numan, do you mean Rick Ocasek and Gary Numan, or do you mean Cars by Gary Numan?
Cars by Gary Numan.
Okay. Probably obvious, really.
Yeah. So that sort of thing, you know, Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick. It was that sort of era. And then I have to say, around 1980, I don't know how many of you remember the Nwobom, or new wave of British heavy metal.
I do, yeah.
And I went through a phase, Saxon, Iron Maiden, and the older stuff, Deep Purple, all the rest of it. And then I went into a bit of a prog phase, so Yes and Genesis and all that sort of stuff.
It was big, wasn't it, in the early 80s, prog, wasn't it? You must have been the only person in the country.
Well, I then went into a very big Marillion phase. I know, still... I knew that would get some groans around the end.
So is this...
Have they got enough to make...
Play or post-Fish?
Pre-Fish. Don't do post-Fish Marillion, obviously. You know. Could see nodding heads.
That'd be sad, wouldn't it, if it was post-Fish Marillion?
So I think I had a reputation with peers for liking weird music, but not weird as...
You were right,
But weird compared to the chart stuff I want to know about. So hence she gave it to me. And I, from the very beginning, Lay on the Land, the bit where, you know, you get that really weird opening and then it all clatters in and your bass line sort of leaps up and down. I was just hooked on it from then. And in fact, I'd recently got, you know, back in the day when you used to have hi-fis with, they were about so tall, with a smoked glass door at the front and space bottom for your record.
Flash.
Well, not only was
what
it
make
Flash,
was it?
A Hitachi, I think, but it had a double cassette player.
Oh, you could do tape to tape.
Which were all the rage. So I actually taped, I can't remember what was on the other side of this tape, but I actually taped Wonderful and Frightening onto another tape, then taped it back onto it, so it was on both sides. But one side must have been a bit hissy because it was like a fourth generation copy of it. But yeah,
because you couldn't wait to hear it again for it to rewind.
Absolutely, yeah. Life's too short to be rewinding tapes. Jeez. You know what I mean? So I mean, in the late 80s, I bought everything the day it came out, you know, and I went back and I bought Grotesque, I bought Slates, which is an album, as you say, Paul, obviously.
It is an album.
And got into that, and then I'm not alone in this. I sort of lost contact with the fall a bit in the 90s.
Yeah, me too.
Partly, well, yeah.
Me a lot.
Partly for musical reasons. I come to appreciate it now, going back. But the Shift Work Code Selfish era at the time wasn't for me. It was personal reasons as well. I got married. I had kids. I was, you know, getting promoted.
I'm going to stick my neck out here. Is your wife not a fall fan?
Which are you talking about, my ex-wife or my co-wife?
I put my foot in there, haven't I, Brian?
No.
What was on the divorce paper?
Yeah.
Who got the fall records? And
she didn't appreciate, this is the my first wife at the time, the mother of my kids, she didn't particularly appreciate the fall, but she didn't appreciate much of my music. My current wife, and those who've read any of my blogs and have listened to the radio show will know, my current wife, Kirsty, who will be listening to this, considers the fall to be the worst band ever.
Hello, Kirsty.
And I even before pandemic, I work at home quite a bit, and she would quite frequently come home, and I'd have the fall on, and she'd come in, put her bag down, and say, "What is this shit?"
Yeah. I can't fathom what that must be like to have a wife who doesn't like the fall. That must be so bad.
She must have stopped asking, though, eventually.
I had discovered online that there is a sort of a small community of us out there who have similar issues with spouses. And a few people have suggested setting up a support group for the wives, I think, as much as for the for that. No, but she has been on one of my radio shows. I did play five songs to her, and she gave her a considered reaction.
That was quite the task. Which five songs did you play?
I knew you'd have to put it on the spot. We did Totally Wired. We stuck to some fairly poppy ones to begin with, and she was okay. I think she liked Totally Wired the best.
I like her already.
We're going to do another one and try her on something a little bit more challenging. So we'll get her on to Hurricane Edward and all that sort of stuff later on.
You're not happily married. You're trying to get rid of her.
I'm very happily married, I should say. But she still hates the fall, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Okay. I don't know.
Right, so you mentioned it, you started off with The Fall in Fives, which was a blog, was it?
Yeah, what happened was, like I say, lost touch a bit in the 90s, and lots of stuff came out. And then I read Dave Simpson's article in The Guardian, that piqued my interest a bit. Yeah. But then I was bought the book, The Fallen, and as I read through The Fallen, I thought, God, there are a lot of Fall albums I've never even heard of, you know, because I've lost track and they were in and out of the... I mean, you had that bit, didn't you, around the time of John Peel's death, where there was a bit of an upsurge in publicity and so on. But I'd missed out. So I basically worked my way back through it.
Right.
And then it must be about 5 years ago now, I'd always had an ambition to be a music writer.
Right.
When I was asked, when I was a young man, I always used to say, I just want John Peel's job when he's finished. So I wanted to write about or to talk about music, just something. And children and career and stuff just got in the way of it. So I was aware that there was still quite a lot of the Fallsback catalogue that I didn't know, because there's lots of interesting side alleys and nooks and crannies and strange B-sides and things off compilations and all that sort of stuff. So I sort of sussed out there were 525. I mean, you could argue about the figure endlessly, and if Dan was here, he'd probably argue with us about the
525 songs?
Yes.
Right, okay.
I mean, there's... ones I didn't include, like, 1969 by the Stooges, the band covered Once, but I didn't include that. So you could.
Oh, right, so you're not talking about recorded now. You're talking about 525 songs of Fall I've ever played.
Some. It's a bit more complicated than that. But yes, as things always are with the Fall, it's a bit more complicated. But that was the figure I came at.
So Brand New Cadillac's in, is it?
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Okay.
So I thought it was quite neat. There was 525. So my original idea was five a day. Because of, the big campaign with all the Eat Healthily and all the rest of it. Then I thought writing about five full songs every day for 105 days sounds like a path into insanity as much as anything else. So I abandoned that. So it just became the fives. I stuck them in a random number generator and just reviewed them as I did them. And I travel a lot with work. And so I'd put the five on a memory stick them in the car and just listen through on the loop and then write it up. And it was a really good way of re-engaging with some songs I hadn't heard for a while, but also discovering some of the things I didn't know. And I started doing this blog, and it was getting, 100, 120 people. And then somebody stuck it on the Mighty Fall group on Facebook, and the numbers shot up, and it became very popular.
I think it was when I retweeted it. I think
well, obviously, yes, yes, of course. And I have to thank, all the way through all of this, both yourselves, Si, a number of ex-Fall members have been really generous with their time, retweeting things, recording things, and all that sort of stuff. So I'm really, really grateful for that. And that there's a lot of that that informs, what's in the book.
Well, it's kind of mutual, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, really enjoyed. But what I want to get onto there. So you went from that, then you went onto You Must Get Them All, the blog.
Yes. So I get in towards the end and thinking, well, I don't want to stop doing this. I really, really enjoy this. So I did the epilogue all about, Mark's death and the end of the Fall and everything. And it occurred to me that, through that, I'd bought, your three books and various other things. But the only one that actually went through the Fall step by step as a history was Simon Ford's book, Hit Priest. It's actually quite hard to get a hold of now. It'll set you back sort of 30, 40 quid if you want a copy of it. And that stops in 2001.
Yeah.
And that's nearly another 20 years missing. So I thought, nobody's really done this. Nobody's actually gone through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's lots of famous stories I know. There's some bits that I'm a bit dark about what happened in which years, in what order they happened. And there's also...
Have you heard the one with me and Simon?
we did one of the episodes with Simon and Steve, and it was like, do you remember that man? Never there. We were never in New Zealand. We were in New Zealand for 2 weeks. No, we weren't. We never went. Yes, we did. It's a whole an hour and a half. And he talks about this studio that was owned by Deacon Blue. At one stage, it's in London. Next week, it's in Glasgow.
Is it a mobile studio?
Yeah,
it's Glasgow,
Sorry.
Yeah. No, well, I don't think Steve is alone in full members of perhaps not always having the clearest picture of what happened in what order.
It's an interesting thing, that, because you don't think I must remember all this, because people are still going to be sat in a room in
well, this is
2021
it.
Talking about
absolutely, yeah.
That
yeah.
time we supported yeah. Iggy Pop in, or whatever, you know. It's an amazing thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so I was trying to sort of get to the bottom of the story, if you like, and tell yeah. the whole story, because it's an amazing, complex and wonderful story. And there's lots of stories that probably aren't true. There's lots of things you hear about that, you know, are a bit apocryphal.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that get misquoted. The Granny on Bongos thing in particular, which is not a line that I like. Well, I'm not surprised that you do. And I think it does, the way it, you know, it lazily got trotted out in a lot of the, I mean, there were some quite thoughtful obituaries of Mark, but a lot of them trotted out some really yeah. obvious stuff with the Granny on Bongos. He fired loads of people, which he didn't, because if you look at the yeah. the list, you know, mm-hmm. far more people walked out than yeah. were fired. You only, you know.
Why are you laughing?
I suppose they might have argued for constructive dismissal on occasions, but if you the number of firings is actually quite small. Yeah. yeah. So there's all these myths out there. So it was nice to try and challenge some of those.
Yeah.
So that's what the book is. It's just an attempt to tell the story, because it occurred to me that nobody had tried to do it.
Yeah.
All the way through, and you must get them all. I mean, it seems the most appropriate number of quotations you could have picked, but it just seemed the most appropriate one from the biggest fan.
Yeah,
and somebody played,
it's
you
not
know, a
true
crucial
though.
Role. No, well,
it's a bonus yeah. attention whether you must get them.
Well, it's an interesting question, because he does specifically, because if you could argue he meant the studio albums, and right. I don't think anybody would argue with that who likes The Fall.
Oh, I don't know,
but he does.
I think there's a couple of those.
Yeah, well,
they're not exactly essential. No names, I'm not going to mention.
Okay. But he does specifically say something about, you know, even live in Nova Scotia 1984 and all the rest of it. And no, I wouldn't
we never
advise.
Played Nova Scotia.
That's my fondest memory. Yeah.
So I wouldn't recommend anybody, for example, invests in all of the live albums, particularly the sort of 25 or so that have come out in the last.
Yeah.
Few years, which are just sort of medium quality bootlegs.
Well, that, you say medium quality. The one I was that one live in Stretford, 1977. It sounds like it's recorded by someone waiting for a bus outside the venue, doesn't it?
Oh yeah. I mean that's been out quite a while now.
Yeah.
The version of Louie at the end. I mean, it sounds like
Mark's that's actually, John the Postman.
Yeah,
addressed
yeah,
his soul, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like somebody's actually trying to ingest the microphone at that point.
Well, that's
I mean,
what he always sounded like.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, it's a bit grim, but no, it's actually not so much that, because Live 77, whilst the recording quality is shocking, it is quite an interesting historical document. So
yes.
You've got them, Mark and Martin talking about the spitting and the chucking of beer, you know, in between songs. You've got Tony Friel announcing his departure. So it's an interesting historical document.
Yes.
I'm more talking about, and I'm sure lots of people here know the ones I mean, these, this set of 10 and all these different, you know, random live albums that have come out, which really shoddy or uninformative sleeve notes and you know all the rest of it, and I haven't bought all of those, so you know I'm not going to say.
Well, I mean that was one thing Mark said with it. It's like Elvis, you know. There's a lot if the people.
No one's
if you know
you to buy it.
If you know, you know which are the good ones. But then I'm not so sure there isn't a certain people who feel beholden to buy a lot of records. Whether are you exploiting those people by putting more and more stuff out? I don't know, because it's not just a fall. Well, you know, you put album back out again with one extra track. People go out and buy it again, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the full reissues have been worth the money. I mean, the Ben Sinister one, for example, is definitely worth anybody's money to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the bonuses, but the diff, you know, the sounds completely different.
Yeah,
now, the remaster really does. One of the things I've done in the book is there's four big sort of appendices at the end. One of which is all the compilations. One of which is all the live albums. And I had hair before I started doing those bits. So I was really quite a trawl through some of those.
So it's a funny that. Yeah, talk about that more, about the appetite for Fall album. I mean, I don't think you need to sell a lot these days to make it profitable, do you? I think they're pretty cheap things to put out now, albums. I mean, not vinyl so much, but a CD or whatever. They don't cost much, do they?
Well, but that's not how bands make their money now, is it?
No, I mean, not at all.
It's merchandise and stuff where you make your money.
Gigs,
you know, I'm sure I'm not alone in here having teenage kids who the notion of buying a record is.
I think it's coming back, actually. My sons buy records now.
Buying vinyl to a certain extent, because people have said but it's almost like a collector's thing.
Yeah,
you
don't play,
about the music.
Play,
yeah. No, and I have friends who don't have a record player who spend 25 quid on these double vinyl reissues, which boggles my mind.
It's stamp collecting. I had a bloke who I worked with, and he used to buy comics, and the one thing you can't do is read them.
Yeah.
You buy it, it goes in a plastic bag. It loses money the moment you turn the first page. I don't know if it's that the same with record.
Yeah, I mean, I just think kids have sort of lost the concept, really. I found myself trying to explain them what a double A side was the other day, which they just meant not. Even my explanation what a double A side was, it meant nothing to them. They don't understand the whole notion of it.
I think the easy trap to fall into is to say it was better then and it's worse now, which is yeah. I mean, I'm not the person to say, but it's just different, isn't it?
I mean, as to the big question as to why people are still interested in Fall, why there's still a big pile of Fall books out on that table, why, you know, I felt the need to write a big book about the Fall. I mean, there's a million and one explanations, but it is, I guess it is an incredible body of work.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might say there's some bits that people feel a bit indispensable or dispensable or otherwise, but it is an incredible body of work. It's an important body of work. And I don't think there's much, certainly contemporary, that you can compare it with.
No.
And the fact that it's still, you know, you still got a couple of Facebook groups of 7,000 people. You still got people who are prepared to read and write blogs and all the rest of it. I think for me, one of the fascinating things is you can take a song from Grotesque, you take a song from Unutterable, you can take a song from Remit, and even if you take the Mark's vocals out, there's something still indefinably Fall-like about them, even though the three songs will sound completely different.
It is true.
And the fact that it's so difficult to pin down what that is one of the things that's fascinating about the group.
Yeah.
About the group. And one of the interesting things is that there's a very small number of Fall songs that don't sound like the Fall.
Yeah.
So you've got, for example, The Night, The Devil and Death, which you'd never guess probably was a Fall song.
It's an instrumental.
Cassell Webb... there is an instrumental version as well, but it's got her vocal on it.
Right.
I mean, you know, when you find out that the title is based on a fictional novelization of Hermann Göring, then that's begins to sound a
fictional
bit
more, novelization.
Yes, it's a book.
It's a niche market, isn't it?
I think it's Hermann Göring. I think that's the right one. So which I'm guessing is where Mark will get the title from, because he liked his World War II.
So he didn't, the fictional novelization isn't his fictional novelization.
No.
Somebody else
wrote it. That's the title of the book.
Well, how do you write a fictional novelization? What does it exist? What is it?
I think it's based around the facts of his life up until when he was in whatever the Nuremberg trials and all that.
A novelization.
Novelization, yes.
I thought you meant a fix. So the novelization didn't exist. I was thinking, what's that? That's a bit meta for me, that.
Yeah. Anyway, we went a bit off the point there, anyway.
I'm going to tell you something now.
Go on.
It was Craig who came up with that title.
Right, back to the publishers.
Okay. You made a note of that, Ian.
At one time, the Mark was struggling a little bit with the amount of stuff when one... With the band, if there's four or five people writing the music, it's fairly easy, but you've got to come up with all the lyrics. And one time, you did ask Craig for some help.
Was that when Ed's Babe?
Ed's Babe and The Night of the Devil and Death were Craig.
Right, okay.
And there's another B-side of that single that's Pumpkinhead Escapes. I think Si says it's about Craig's cat, is that right?
Yeah.
Craig's cat was called Pumpkinhead. Well, they don't make a lot of sense otherwise, do they? What's your cat called? Tiddles. What's the name of this song? Pumpkinhead.
I did have a swelling.
Nice. Is that why it escaped? It was ill, was it?
No, I don't think so. It had a swelling, but he used to call it Pumpkinhead.
Right, okay.
I mean, I think at 190,000...
Interesting to anyone.
Well, I think at 190,000 words, it's probably not an anecdote I need to add in that.
No,
Craig's cat's swelling.
No.
There we go.
That's
for me, the appeal of the Fall is that it's so hard to pin down what it is that makes all these songs sound the same, even when they're completely different.
Because I didn't really listen to a lot of the stuff after me, but since we've been interviewing the ex-members, we have been listening
to Kieran, and there is
something there that
it's still the Fall.
With Kieran and Pete and Dave, you know, there is a very distinctive sound to that last lineup all the way through. That sort of, there's a very sort of surf rockabilly sort of thing running through it. But it still sounds very different. Doesn't sound like Container Drivers, does it?
It's still a very different sound,
but it's in the tradition of the Fall is the thing, I guess.
I mean, that was quite the trick, wasn't it, I think, to do that. To sort of, you know, because to play the Man United way for 40 years and never, if football managers can't manage it. You change manager and the way you play the game goes down. As we know at the moment, it goes right bloody down. But to keep that sort of level, although the Wood argue was maybe a couple of years after 98 where he kind of lost the plot a bit, understandably. Would you not?
I mean, you can. For me,
he's in the room.
I,
man, he's in the room. Give him a break.
You can find value in all of them, and it's the thing that you can you. I think if you go on to I don't know, a Beatles site or a Beach Boys site and something and propose these are the five best Beatles songs, you get argument about it.
Yes.
But whatever four album you put up, somebody will come and give a passionate defence of it.
Yeah.
Okay? And I'll give you a great example, which we were talking about earlier, is that those of you who've heard that I've done this Fall in Fives radio show where people do recordings and they say what their special four song is. So you did one about Frightened.
I did, yeah.
Where you suggested that the last live version of that was because your performance on it could never be topped.
I think that's why they stopped doing it. I don't think anybody would argue with that, would you?
Well, that's quite interesting, wasn't it? Because it went back into the set, didn't it? Because hadn't Tony Friel been saying something about he'd written it? So Mark put it back in the set so he could stay in the middle of it. If you slow this down, it's Stepping Stone.
So anyway, you've
done a recording. Mark's done one.
Yeah.
Some people have promised one and not done it yet.
Okay.
He's very busy.
and a lot of them have been not, you know, ex-members, been regular Fall fans who've sent them in. And one of the reasons I mention it is Dan has done one, and we'll probably come on to Dan later. But he chose the title track of Levitate, and Levitate is his favourite Fall album.
What are you thinking of that, Steve? Is that good?
Bad memories of that. As I go through the Fall stuff, and you can, if you look at an album, you're affected by who was in the band and the atmosphere in the band and the vibe and the chemistry. And he wasn't there on that one, was it? Yeah.
Mm. Right. Where was that? In London, was it?
Aberdeen, wasn't it?
That's one of the things that's interesting about Levitate is you can almost hear that atmosphere in it. You know, you do some like 4.5 inch and the chaos and intensity of it. It sounds like almost like a group sort of tearing itself apart. Yeah. Sorry, I'm turning very music journalist now. But to go back to people sending things in, I had one this morning arrived in the email. A guy off the Fall forum sent one in. And his choice, and I know neither of you two even know this song, but it'll get a few wry smiles, I imagine, in the audience. But he's actually chosen Das Boot, which
none of them have heard it.
One laugh for it over there. Was that Mike over there? had a laugh at it. Yeah, okay. Do you want to have a go at describing Das Boot, Mike?
No.
Yeah. It's off Reformation. You can't call it a filler when it's 10 minutes long. So
that's a lot of filler, yeah.
So you get 2.5 minutes of what sounds like Pink Floyd, floaty keyboards, Dave Gilmour solos, and it settles into this electronic pulse. And at various occasions, Mark sounds like he's sort of tapping wine glasses with pencils.
Yeah.
And him and Ellen at some point start going e-e-e-e over and over again. And he does this for 10 minutes. So
Is it a single?
Funnily enough, on Spotify as soon as we get home.
But I did see somebody propose the idea, because the last song on Reformation is called Outro, which is simply 30 seconds of three pulse. It just goes duh, duh, duh.
Right.
According to the credits, it took five people to write that song, believe it or not. But somebody did propose on the forum that we all put it on repeat on Spotify. That would make you loads of money, but I mean,
it won't make me any money.
Well,
you'd have to put a lot of repeats on Spotify to make anybody any
absolutely,
kind of money
yeah,
at
get
all.
Put as 0.0018 pence or something for play. It's literally.
The famous one is David Crosby, who said, my Spotify royalties for last month were something like £500. You know, I mean, these Crosby, Stills, and Nash and the Birds. But I think he's getting a few more listens in the Fall, I would imagine.
Possibly, yeah. Anyway, I guess the point is that even that, which I think 99% of all fans would say is a bit rubbish, even that has its passionate defender.
Well, one of the things I've talked about before is I think whether it's good or whether it's bad kind of becomes irrelevant otherwise. It's always interesting, the Fall. Yeah. And I think you get to a certain point with the band where interesting trumps good or bad, because good or bad's completely subjective anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when I first did the Fall in Fives blog, and some of the songs were either relatively new to me or I hadn't listened to in a long time, I was probably going back quite harsh on a few of them that I didn't really get. But having gone through the whole blog and then the book and listening to everything. There's actually now very few songs that, that I can't find quite a lot of merit
That's Stockholm Syndrome, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's face it.
Yeah, well, that's it, clearly.
I mean, you need a break. You need to go away and sit on a beach for a few weeks, I think, and listen to Steps, probably.
Yeah. Well, Steps played here this weekend, I believe.
That'd be a book, wouldn't it? You could go through every Steps song. Talk about
yeah. Well, I mean, the young lady who served us breakfast yesterday said that she'd been to see Steps. It was the sound of her childhood, which made me feel old.
Jesus, that makes you feel old, doesn't it? Bloody hell!
Not the sound of my childhood.
So, what I was going to ask you is: so this all sounds very bloggy. That's a bloggy kind of territory, that, isn't it? Yeah. What made you want to turn it into a book?
I think just the fact that thinking about the Simon Ford book going up to 2001, right, and this great gap. And whilst there weren't books, one of the things about that I've tried to draw out in the book is a lot of the evidence and a lot of the character of the Four comes actually from the online community, which is a tremendously powerful thing. And I think it was in the sort of late 90s, Steve, you started to notice, didn't you, that when Mark was having some of his wayward performances, that people were picking up on this and it was having an influence on ticket sales, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a wealth of information out there. So whilst there's no books and stuff about 2001 onwards, there's pages and pages and pages.
The people
who went, the people who sat in the pub and waited, the people who were frustrated by a half-hour set or got a brilliant one-hour set, the people who bought, who posted about it, who did all the rest, you know, went on the forum.
What was said in between songs and everything.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's all there.
It's all there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you got the fool.org, yes, every last little bit of the in-between, changes to the lyrics, I mean, it's all there.
Yeah.
So they're as much a part of this book in some ways as the group, because it's the story. It's not just the story of the Fall. It's the story of the Fall and the community.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people who've put things on. I'm seeing Steve over there, and who has put, almost theatrical events. Would you describe them as, Steve, as about the Fall? It is a community.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. I mean, it's a slight, you know, you look at the online forum now, unsurprisingly, it's dwindled in numbers, you know, because there's no gigs to talk about anymore. There's no new records to talk about other than dodgy live albums. So I've tried to make that part of the sort of authority of the book, that it's not just because it's based on what Si said, what YouTube said.
Yeah, it's about the people who are there. Unfortunately, it is a good time to do it, I thought, because, well, there is no more. Yeah. And you can cover the lot. Yeah. And
is that, we've talked about this before, whether it's easier to be a Fall fan now than it was. Because there's always an element that you could say something and be dismissed, if you know what I mean, or your opinion not being valid. People's idea of the Fall now is up to them. There is no canon, is there? There's no one to say, yes, this is right and this is wrong. It's all opinion now, do you not think?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm saying, is that whatever album or song or whatever you choose, you'll get somebody who decries it. I mean, you'll get people who say, you know, there's one of the most frequent posters on the Fall Online forum, for example. I won't mention them by name, but reckons that Blindness is one of the worst songs the group ever did. You know? Ooh, that caused some controversy in the audience, that one. It wasn't me.
I like that.
It's clearly not the worst.
Well, no.
I mean,
no.
We could be here for some time trying to work out what we think the worst Fall song is.
Yeah.
We tried to tie you down to that backstage.
Oh, we're coming to that. No, we're coming to what he thinks the worst Fall album is.
Yeah, well,
we'll get to that. We'll get to that at the end.
But it was difficult transferring it from a blog to a book.
Yes, because they're very different beasts, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, at first I thought it was going to be, and Ian's had to be with me all the way through this process doing this, obviously.
He's just scratching his head here. this again.
At first I thought, because, you know, one of the things of the style of writing a blog is, for example, you put all the hyperlinks within the sentence.
Yes.
So people are interested in this interview, so they can click on it and go to that interview. So you've got to take all that out to begin with. Then you've got to decide, you know, how much of that do I then put as a footnote?
Yeah.
And first version, Ian, how many footnotes did I have? Yes.
More than Paul.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, no, more than you. Yeah. So, yes, I discovered I was no, I like the way you use footnotes. I tell you who else is very good, with Stuart Lee.
Brilliant. I got a lot of my, but I think that's a different thing. It's not like see this for details. It's a really good way of having two different voices, actually.
Well, it's two books, isn't it, with him? Because it's his actual stand-up transcribed and his commentary on it is a footnote. So, yeah, I tried to do that. It didn't work. We had something like 1,400 footnotes in the book, so that had to go. But actually, it's a different voice.
Yes.
And also, you're writing for, like, installments. So there's a certain amount of repetition, ironically, that you can get away with.
Yes.
So you might think, well, okay, I mentioned this person. I think I said who he was, you know, a couple of posts ago, but I'll put it in again.
Yeah.
Because you can't assume with a blog post that the person has read the last one and the one before.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're reading a book, you know, you will expect. And overlap and repetition was another thing to get out.
Yeah.
I mean, for those who've read the blog, it is very extensively revised and it's extended as well. And I was quite surprised by myself when I went back to some chapters, need a lot of work. There was Fallhead's Roll. I hadn't done nearly enough on that. And
right.
Captured that well enough and looked at the lyrics well enough.
Good album, isn't it?
It is a good album.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was quite a difficult process. And it was, you know, I converted all the blogs into a Word document, tried editing them, and then I had to go through it all again. And then it's been to Ian and back twice since then. So it's been quite
slow. He's not finished
yet,
he was telling me. I wouldn't make any plans for the next few weeks.
Yeah. So no, but that I mean, that's made me, I guess, fall in love with the whole subject matter all on because you've become so immersed in
right.
it. And it's so
well, I mean, that's interesting, that, because that could have gone one or two ways, couldn't it? You could have said, sick to death of this.
Yeah.
Have you not got any burnout at all? You're not going to go home now unless, you know, get the book back from the publishers. What are you going to do? I'll sit down and listen to a Fallout.
I don't just listen to the Fall.
No,
there's lots of other things.
One would hope not.
I listen to. Well, I would be twice divorced, I think, if that was the case. But I never got burnt out with the... With the writing of it, really, which to me says something about the endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, thing.
I mean, if I was writing about a band who had 8 albums, possibly, but there's such a large and, you know, wildly diverse back catalogue. I said it's quite the body of work, isn't it? So no, I've not got tired of it.
Right. So what you're saying about what makes the Fall capable of that? Then what? I mean, obviously, part of that is there's a lot of stuff, isn't
it? Yeah.
Other bands have a lot of stuff out, but there's something about the Fall that makes it capable of sustaining that much interest. And I'm not quite sure how to put that in words, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my answer before that I said about, you know, the songs from different eras have that ineffably Fall thing about them without telling. That's quite a good cop out, that one, because it's, the fact that I'm not answering the question is what's fascinating about the question. I always think that's quite a neat one, really. But interestingly, the guy who, the Das Boot fan who emailed me this morning, he used a phrase in his little summary that he said, the Fall are the vortex through which all ideas must pass. Now, I haven't decided yet. I only read that. So I haven't decided that whether that's incredibly meaningful or profound
bullshit.
Or just completely meaningless bullshit. So,
there's an interesting question in context of the Fall, isn't it?
But I think the whole point is, one of the things I love about the Fall is it brings people to write things like that.
Yes.
And to think about things like that and to actually think
about
it.
I'm not so sure he thought about that before he wrote it down. That's not it.
Well,
he wouldn't have wrote it.
Yeah, well, perhaps he'd listened to Das Boot too often.
Just say that again. The Fall is what?
The Fall is the vortex through which all ideas must pass.
That's clearly not true, is it?
Well, if I'm going to be honest, I've been thinking about this morning. I'm not entirely sure what it means.
No,
it
doesn't mean either.
Well, it doesn't mean anything, does it? Could argue that because of that.
But the fact that it can inspire that sort of thing, the fact that it can inspire books that just tell the story of my time in the Fall, or analysis of one album like you wrote, or stuff like the Excavate book, which looks at it from all manner of different angles, which, you know, isn't everybody's cup of tea, but the fact that it keeps on giving in that way, you know. And yes, there are some artists who still go. I mean, my mate Chris, who I've been staying with this weekend, he still buys the music magazines, you know, Uncut and Mojo.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know it's the latest issue of Uncut, was it? It was a track-by-track analysis of Revolver.
Now,
why anybody still needs a track-by-track analysis of Revolver, I don't really know, to be honest. But
well, I always think, I was talking about this before, Revolution in the Head, the book by Ian MacDonald, which takes every record the Beatles made and goes through them. It's a very similar sort of USB as yours. But, I mean, it's nothing like your book. But I think that's such a good book, it kind of closed down the industry on that. I would have thought. Yeah. But it hasn't. It's really clearly hasn't. Yeah. But that's the thing with like Mojo, they put the Beatles on the front, they sell three times as many copies.
Absolutely. And of course, there was a recent one, which I'm sure some people in this room bought, an Uncut Collected Special on the Fall.
Yeah.
And personally, I was a bit disappointed to see the last sort of quarter of the band's career done in a couple
It's really weird, that one. It's like bang, bang, bang. And then,
I thought
it was off, wasn't it?
Disappointed with that, really.
Yeah.
Like I say, it's the fact that, you know, the vortex thing, that it still inspires people to think in that way. And, and it doesn't seem to exhaust people. It always seems to be a different angle to look at. I mean, it helps. You've got the huge diversity in the music.
Yeah.
We've talked about the different eras. But then, of course, you've got the words as well. And I know, I'm sure many of you here have been on the Annotated Fall and looked at the analysis of the lyrics that, well, his real name is Chris, but he goes, well, I don't know how to say his name. It's Buzz Fidget, I was saying. And I got to know him quite well. And you can spend a lifetime just picking the words
apart.
I mean, you get to a point, I think, it's hard to say where exactly where it starts, but certainly from Ersatz GB onwards, where it isn't really about any sort of coherent meaning in words. It's about the sounds of his voice and that he starts playing around with things.
Well, he does that sort of homophones where you think he's saying one word and he's saying another word slightly similar sounding that means something completely different.
I mean, how he's Buzz Fidget, how he sat down and tried to transcribe. I know. How he sat down and transcribed everything from, you know, 2000 onwards. Because, some of it you really can't. I mean, parts of Levitate, you really can't work out what's going on. And, you know, you get more and more of that as you go on. So, yeah, so there's so much you can pull out of all the lyrics as well.
But do you think the lyrics got better for that or worse for that, or it's just different, I suppose?
It is just different. I mean, you know, you can't compare some of the stuff on the last few albums with, I find it fascinating, but you can't compare it with something like New Puritan. You know, around that time, Mark had just ideas pouring out of him.
Yeah.
And you listen, I mean, New Puritan's a great example because it's this constant stream, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's almost like he can't get the words out in time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's fascinating. So I think you've got to look at it objectively in terms of lyrical content, in terms of extracting meaning and themes and all the rest of it. You can't compare the early 80s stuff to post 2000.
Side of that would be that it's amazing that he found another way to do it, isn't it?
Absolutely. Really? And the sound of particularly the last album and, you know, New Facts Emerge is, I think, a man who'd come to terms with what his voice could and couldn't do.
Yes.
And to make an instrument out of it. And there's a lot of playing around with his voice. It zooms about between channels and all the rest of it on that album. And, you know, there's even the and again, I don't know how to pronounce it, Zitterkman, or I don't know, I never know how you say that one.
I don't know.
No.
We could have a poll, I suppose.
It sounds like he's recording it from a megaphone sort of three buildings away sort of thing, you know, and it's almost like it is just, let's play around with the sound. Mm-hmm. That's not to say there aren't some fascinating lines within it, but, you know, I think you have to give up at some point trying to extract any direct meaning. Not all the time. And if you look at Sublingual Tablet, there's Mark being grumpy about technology quite a lot.
There's a lot of that.
There's some quite straightforward stuff on there.
Well, I don't know why Paul Fonz invented the internet, didn't they? They were on there in 1984.
1982, I think. Yeah. We said. We invented it. It's bizarre, that, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, there are not layers of hidden meaning behind Quit iPhone, for example.
That's fairly...
is 4 minutes of put your bloody phone down,
at least he had stopped calling it a portaphone by then, hadn't he?
Yes, a portaphone, yeah. But, I mean, again, there's a tradition of that. I mean, there's turn that bloomin' blimey Space Invader off.
You know? He told me to turn it on. I hadn't switched it on without him knowing. That was set up, that, you know. Honestly, it wasn't. I hadn't snuck it in and switched it on without him knowing. Yeah, but there was that. He was looking for things to be annoyed about, which he did do very well. He did annoyed very well. I mean, which is, it sounds flippant, but it's not, I think. I think ranting, just for the sake of ranting, is comes dull very quickly. But if you can rant in that sort of laser precision of where he just rips things to pieces, quite an amazing talent.
Yeah, and when he goes away from that, actually, it makes it particularly affecting. I mean, there's the song on Full Heads Roll about Hunter S. Thompson, the title of which has completely gone out of my head. You want to? Midnight in Aspen, thank you. Thank you, Stephen Ian. I knew I'd have a blank moment at some point. I mean, that's a beautiful song. I mean, the imagery behind that, you know, about Hunter Thompson's suicide and the bullet travelling out and coming back again in the reprise. Yeah. And, you know, so when he does do that, it I think... Makes those songs even stronger. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Which is lovely. But it's an effective thing to switch it off and know to switch it off, switch it on and switch it off again.
Yeah.
But that we were talking about that what the fall can inspire. There's that level of detective we were talking about before, and I don't know if anybody knows personally, or there's a guy called Danny No, who is like the Inspector Clouseau of the fall. He'll find everything out.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's plenty of people here aware of Danny No and his work.
We did actually invite him to come today, but it's his birthday. Happy birthday, Danny No, if you're listening.
Yes, happy birthday, Danny. He texted me this morning.
He won't be listening.
He's on a... he'll listen at some point when he's on the podcast.
He's not interested.
He'll listen to every second of this.
Yeah, I know he will.
He'll correct about seven things that I've said. And that was 1981, I think you'll find.
If
for any of you who don't know Danny, he's a librarian by trade, and he uses his skills basically to investigate the ephemera of all. Yeah. I mean, his most famous one was the Dr. Buck's letter speech, where he discovered the bit about the realm of Pete Tong at the end.
So there's the realm
of the essence of Tong. That's right. So he reads out from a magazine, and some early versions actually I think people said at gigs he was actually reading it.
He had the magazine, did he?
And, you know, for Dan spent virtually 20 years, I think, trying to track down where this was. It turns out it's a Virgin Trains magazine called Hotline, which he had to do, I think, 3 trips to the British Library to actually find where it was. He did. There's a podcast out there somewhere. He spends an hour talking about exactly how he tracked it down. So that's his most famous one. Probably the best one that expresses Dan's obsessive nature is there was a question somewhere about how tall Mark was.
Right.
And he took a photograph taken somewhere around here, I think, somewhere. And there was a signpost next to it. And Dan actually travelled to Manchester to measure the bricks. And
that's dedication. Come on.
Exactly.
I mean, he lives in Los Angeles, so yeah.
So his latest thing is he investigated, as you know, Mark quite frequently mentioned that... Well, there were 2 films allowed on the tour bus, weren't there? There was Spinal Tap and Zulu.
Oh, and the producers.
The producers as well. Oh, yeah. All right. Have you made a note of that one as well, Ian? But those were 2 big favourites. Yeah, well. And he always claimed, didn't he, that he had a
relative at Rorke Shift. Yeah.
A Rorke Shift. Well, Dan is now investigated to find out whether that's true. And finding out that when he goes through the military and historical record, there are quite a lot of Smiths, unfortunately. So
Yeah, he had a relative at Rorke Shift when the first bullet was fired. He was back in the Foresters when the second one was
fired. There's really obscure stuff. I mean, there's Hostile, which is a song some of you will know from Light User Syndrome, is all about some obscure Roman Catholic sect that I can't remember the name of, but he just discovered that. It was something to do with a pamphlet. There's a line in Lie Dream of Casino Soul, which he thinks is taken from an advert for a robot shoplifting detective thing that was advertised in Titbits magazine in 1980.
Wow.
Yeah.
In the Paulie Yates on a moped as well.
Yes, he's found the page of whatever it was that has Paulie Yates on a moped.
What song was that that's got Paulie Yates on a moped?
That's Alton Towers, I want to say.
Of course. What else would it be called, a song about Paulie Yates on a moped? Alton Towers, obviously.
Yeah, so, I think it's that one. That might be one that Dan will correct me on.
So what's interesting about that is he's not screaming, it's not just him, people actually are interested in what he finds out, and probably not as interested as he is.
Well, it's quite divisive. If you take the Fall Online Forum as an example, which is an interesting and strange place. I don't know whether we've got many members of the Fall Online.
They're all at home
today.
They're all at home on the keyboard.
Yeah. And that Pringle doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah. It's divisive in that there are some people who think it's nonsense. It doesn't get to the bottom of the music and the lyrics and all the rest of it. But a lot of people love it and find it fascinating. I think they're kind of fascinated with the process that Dan goes through to do it.
Yes.
And, you know, anybody who would make 3 trips to the British Library to find out which magazine Virgin Marky Smith took a paragraph from is either dedication or insanity, depending on which way you look at
it. There's a bit of both in there, probably. But again, you're back to that thing. I don't think anybody's doing that about the lyrics to Stars by Simply Red, is that? I don't think so. I think maybe Bob Dylan, maybe, would you say, would be...
I mean, that's a huge industry, isn't it?
It
Dylan
is.
And the lyrics and so on. And that's... But the thing about Dylan, I mean, I'm not a huge... I like Bob Dylan. I own a few Bob Dylan albums. But, I'm not an obsessive by any means. I know there are lots of
obsessives.
There
isn't room in your brain to be an obsessive Bob Dylan fan,
No, I don't think so. I know via Ian, because I know Root have published a few Bob Dylan books, and I believe there are a few... Dylan equivalent Danny Knows out there.
One in particular, is it?
All right, okay.
Danny Yes is called.
Yeah. But to me, not to say that Dylan has produced lots of albums with some really good music on them, but it's the balance towards the focus on being on the words is much more so with Bob Dylan, I would say.
Would you not say that's true of the Fall?
I think it varies. I think there's people who love... and that's why a lot of the cover versions are loved. I mean, a lot of them are not, but people, bounced up and down to Mr. Pharmacist.
Mike
and the Grass Grow is always a pretty popular one. I just think the balance is slightly different because, I mean, Levitate, which you mentioned, Levitate is a weird and harsh and difficult album. And it's not just because of the words. It sounds weird and harsh and difficult.
Well, who was behind that then? Who would have made that? Why are some Fall albums more difficult and harsh, you reckon, then? Is it a point to make, you think?
I don't think it helped on Levitate that the producers walked out after the first day and left us.
Did they work out? Because Mark would say he dismissed them.
Well.
But then again...
What would you reckon?
But, And that wasn't the last time that happened, because Full Head's role, Ben Pritchard and that lot started in New York.
Yeah.
And Mark couldn't get there for about a week, I think. No, 10 days, something like that. Yeah. And they got there and they'd recorded 10 songs, all complete, just went with the vocals to drop in, and he said, wipe them.
I think he did it with hearing that band in Germany. I think they went out to scope a studio, did some stuff, thinking, oh, he's going to love this.
Yeah.
Which is strange, isn't it? But the other thing that I think you can criticise, and you say it's counterproductive and it's not really fair on the people in the band, but then you look at it and you think, well, you look at the body of work and you think probably it was worth it in the end to do that. I mean, I think there was some shoddy behaviour, but you can't argue with the results, can you? You can't argue with the fact that he kept that band going for 40 years. I think that's quite the achievement, isn't it?
It is, and I think it's always worth mentioning that you know, it's not to denigrate his passion for it, but it was a job for Mark, wasn't it? It was his business, it was his line of work.
But it was his life as well.
It was his life. I would say it was his life more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. But he still saw the full product, getting an album out every year, all that. That was.
Well, I think he saw that was what bands did. I think he thought that bands who go away for 5 years and contemplate the navel, they were the ones in the wrong, I think.
Yeah,
that's not what bands do.
Mentioning no names, but I didn't bring my nunchucks.
No, did you not? No, I'm sure he's only having a laugh, the lad. But no, 5 years is a long time to go and
to not be in a band, isn't it? Well, I think what I'm getting at, though, that he felt responsible for making it work. You know, that making business decisions and making a profit, making sure it kept going, the wheels kept turning, all the rest of it. And I think you've sometimes got to look at it in that sort of light. And that's another fascinating thing about the Fall, is the level of determination. I mean, I'm sure there's people in this room who've listened to songs or gone to gigs and thought, you know, that's got to be the end.
Yeah.
And if you look at, for example, you know, after you and Tommy and Carl left, you know, there's a handful of gigs he did with, you know, all tape loops and all the rest of it. I mean, there was a number of people there thought, well, this has got to be the end, hasn't it? I mean, and how many great albums have there been? You know,
Well, I think you thought that might have been it, did you? When you went, did you think he was going to get it back together to the extent he did?
No, I didn't, know.
Well, you've got to give him that, haven't you? I mean, you've got to say. Well.
No, just because of the fact that promoters weren't booking us and...
That was a bit of a grim time, that, wasn't it?
Well, I think a lot of people thought that things were coming to an end in that autumn tour you did in 96, where you were playing all of the, you know, when Bricks had just come back and you had played some, you know, Worthing and...
Your favourite gig, wasn't it? That one, what was it? Worthing? Was that the worst one you did?
Worthing's the shoelaces one, isn't it?
Yes.
As it's known. You were there. Somebody in the audience tied his shoelaces together.
Yeah, and he toppled over backwards. Worthing came.
Hang on, let's face it, it's a bloody awful thing to do that.
It is.
You've paid in.
Yeah, and Worthing wouldn't pay the band, I think.
There was a lot of people asked for the money back.
So there's been points.
Blame them.
No.
And I think that's another one of the fascinating things about the Fall, is this relentless refusal to give up, I think, and just keep going. And you know, it's a bit of a cliche when you look at the reviews over the year, you know, oh, amazing, the best album since whatever. You know, everything seems to be the best album since.
Yeah.
And, you know, people had him, you know, and the group as a whole as down and out, and you know, bouncing back.
Well, I think that one of the ones if you say Dexy's Midnight Runners and The Fall, similar age span, haven't they? They've both been going similar, maybe a couple of years either there. One bloke who's been there all the way through, and you know, various members. But Dexy's have done 5 albums in that time. And how many did you say The Fall did? 55, was it?
Well,
the studio albums.
Well, 32.
32.
But you always say that the caveat is there are always some naysayers who, I'm afraid, say that Slate is not.
Well, let's call it 32 and a half.
32 I always go off for.
So, but the 5 Dexy's albums are all brilliant, aren't they? I mean, I don't know whether you like Dexy's, but I think they're an astonishing body of work. But even given that, and you can't just say that he was waiting for the muse to hit him. He did a lot of hanging around Kevin Rowland and wasting his time. So which is the better approach, I think? I think I think Mark's idea was, if you're a band, you put an album out every year. If you don't put an album out every year, you're not a band, you know?
Yeah, and I think he got increasingly frustrated with record companies moving away.
Yeah, they don't want to do that. It's too much. We had that
with Phonogram. Yeah, they didn't want us to do an album a year. So, but, you know, it's not that difficult. 12 songs in a year.
Yeah, it's only two each, isn't it? There's, how many? Three each, there's five. Yeah, I mean, it's not hard, is it? But well, which is mad. I think, has that not come back now, though? Because Spotify, you can put an album out every 10 minutes if you want now, can't you?
People put songs out now, though, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, which is a shame, isn't it? I mean, I know that you get into this old fart thing of I remember getting up and turning the record over. But I think there's something to be said for that, an album as a body of work, isn't there?
Yes, I mean, you could argue it became a bit sort of fetishized by music journalists, particularly in the 70s.
That yeah.
It became the format above all that must be worshipped. And so
yeah.
On. And I think, you know, if I look at my kids, for example, they have songs that they like, you know, and even the artists that they really, really like, because they're into, you know, Fallout Boy, Panic at the Disco. And
all right, okay. Stuff.
Yeah. And they just have individual songs. They couldn't even tell you which albums they're on.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, again, it's the, you know, you built the pyramids without cranes, but it's not necessarily a good idea to go back and try and do it again. But
no.
I think there is something to be said to say that this is what, I mean, it's what the Fall are, that you got. It was like a sort of end of year report, or depending on where it came out, but this is what the Fall have got to say this year.
Yeah.
And it starts with this track and it ends with this track. And I think that's kind of lost a bit now, do you not?
Yeah. And I tell something else that's really interesting about going through the Fall, going through the history, is of course, you know, a lot of the rehearsal stuff that a lot of groups would have done in a rehearsal studio was done on the road, wasn't it? A lot of yeah. songs were developed yes. on yeah. the stage. And that's a fascinating thing. If you listen to enough of the bootlegs that are out there, you can hear songs being developed. And particularly later on, they often had different titles to begin with and yeah. the way they evolved.
I tell you what, though, I hate that. Because as a Beatles fan, you get Sergeant Pepper, you get Revolver, you get whatever. And I think they are diminished greatly by you get anthology and you hear them doing
take 17.
57 takes of Benefit of Mr. Kite and you hear, you know, then this is when Ringo did that. I think it detracts me yeah. from the art, I think. I think it's a shame that you got to hear everything now. You've got to hear Paul McCartney clearing his throat and, you know, and...
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much of that in the Fall reissues. You have got a bit... There's three different takes of Rausch Rumble on one of the...
Yeah.
Ones which you don't particularly learn a great deal from.
Well,
I have
no,
to
no.
say. But there's not too much of that.
No, maybe not. But I mean, but is that because the Fall put everything out? Do you not think they didn't? Police?
Well, of course, there's also the fascinating songs that never appeared, like Surrogate Mirage, for example. Which
if you
once
put a
vanished.
Gun to my head and said, "Well, how does Surrogate Mirage go?" I wouldn't be able to tell you. We only played it once. Is
you
it
only
once?
Played it once? Leicester Polly, I think, something like that.
I'll take your word for that.
I can almost hear Dan noting down. No, it was Nottingham.
But yeah, I've heard it, and it was a number of years ago. But the thing I remember about that song is it's not a noodle, is it? It's
no,
not,
and that's the weird
jazz
thing.
Jazz or punk shit, or whatever that one was. It's a yeah, song, isn't
which,
it?
Which sounds neither like jazz nor punk. Which
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course,
or up for that matter.
Well, that's the news because a lot of songs start life as the intro, don't they? And they used to play them, and it's the yes. Good Evening We Are the Fall bit, yeah. And then they. Gradually get yeah. a few lyrics and so on. So there's that aspect as well. But yeah, some just disappeared. I mean, no, what's the one I'm thinking? Words of Expectation. You know, that went on Appeal Session. I mean, New Puritan.
Yeah, well, that's on Total's Turns, isn't it?
Well, it's a strange version. Total's Turn, yeah, yeah.
The Appeal version's good, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, the Appeal version's amazing, yeah. But,
that's how I got the job. That was the song that got me the job. Because they'd done it, and they'd never done it with drums. They did it in the bedroom, and then... We rehearsed it at TJ Davidson's, who's got a book out now, hasn't he, TJ Davidson?
About. He has.
Yeah.
And I put some drums to that, and that, I think that was what convinced Mark that I could actually pull my weight. So I've always had a soft spot for that.
Okay. No, it's a great, great song.
Yeah, but yeah, so there isn't that much then, you don't think, that's in the vaults?
I don't know whether there's much left. I had heard there's a few outtakes from New Facts Emerge.
Right. Well, Grant always reckons he's got... Albums.
Grant has a better version of every album, doesn't he?
Oh,
he
does. Yeah, yeah. Even the ones he didn't produce. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Imperial Wax came out with his sort of take, which is interesting. They're different. I wouldn't say they're neither better or worse. I think they're just interestingly different. I mean, there's also the tale of the long lost album that came before Real New Fall LP.
Yeah.
When again, Ben Pritchard.
Is that Country on the Click, is it?
Well, before that, they said they'd recorded a lot that he got rid of and it was a great lost album.
Oh, so this is the one, not the one that didn't come out. This is the one before the one that didn't come out.
This is the one that didn't come out before the one that didn't come out. Yeah. And again, you know, that's good. I mean, that's another fascinating thing is hearing, comparing Mark's version of things with other people's versions of things, which is always quite an interesting one. I mean, the one that always makes me laugh is the story of, you know, the punch in the nightclub and the rest of it, which Mark's, so obviously your account, Steve, has got you all letting off steam, dancing at Rock the Casbah, your jet lag sort of catching up with you, and Mark's not happy because he thought the game wasn't great.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
But then you go in Renegade, and apparently he rescued you from embarrassing yourself in a heavy metal disco dancing to Smoke on the Water.
I think you made the point. Who the hell has ever danced to smoke on the water?
Yeah. So
and I don't think I've ever been rescued by Mark for
not really a nice way to rescue you either. Slap you about the face. Yeah. Thanks for that, Mark. You've rescued me there. Thanks.
Renegades and Entertainer Reading Places, but it gives an interesting perspective, if not always attached to reality.
I love that book. I think it's great. I think.
Do you?
I do. Yeah. I think. And this is going to be a ridiculously pretentious analogy, but it's a bit like looking at Renegade for what actually went on. Is a bit like looking at St. John's Gospel for historical fact about Jesus.
Yes, I mean, that's probably slightly easier for you to say than Steve. He's not as rude about you as he is about Stephen.
Yeah, well, it depends what you mean by rude. He doesn't mention me at all. Now, is that a form of rudeness? Okay.
True.
I've been completely airbrushed out of history. So you might call it rudeness. It might have been a kindness. He might have said, I can't put that in.
Didn't he describe you as a free transfer or something like that in the book?
I don't know.
Oh, right, fair enough. Yeah. What's he called?
A free transfer?
Something like that. I can't remember, yeah.
Well, from a roadie?
That might have been Carl.
I mean, I don't think he was that bad about me in that, was he?
You said you were quite loyal, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, in a sense, being ignored may well be worse.
Well, yes. Yeah, well, okay. Well, on that bombshell, I think we're going to have to wrap up. We've reached our hour there. And all the best with the book. Yes.
Thank you very much.
I've been fascinated to read the final edition. I've read the notes. Selwyn sent me, but so good luck with it. And if you'd like to thank Mr. Steve Pringle, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on Old Brother. Episode 4 will be with you in 2 weeks. You can follow us on Twitter at Old Brother Show, at Hanley PA, and at Stephen Hanley 6 with the PH. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, or RSS, so you'll never have to miss an episode. For further reading on the fall, you might want to check out The Big Midweek and Have a Bleeding Guess, available from Root Publishers, where you'll also soon find You Must Get Them All. Hope to see you again soon, and remember, if you're driving, take your car. Ta-ra!
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.